listening to Independence West on VOA.
We're going to talk about telenovelas towards the end of the program. We're going to preview tomorrow's Champions League final between two German football teams with two German football fans. And in a couple of minutes, we're going to talk about a new voting age law in Tacoma Park, a city very close to Washington, D.C. We got Roger Muntu in the studio. He's normally 10 minutes late, but he's so distressed by some news we've just heard about our producer that he actually showed up on time. This was more than he could take. We got Rohit Kulkarni, who's just now walking into the studio. He's playing the role of Roger Muntu. To today. We got François Sou in the production booth. We got Nelson Herbert on engineering. It's good to talk to all of you. You're listening to ID West. I'm Robert D. And at 1700 GMT, the latest from the VOA newsroom, a few headlines. Pakistan says it remains opposed to U.S. drone strikes a day after President Barack Obama justified what he called, quote, constrained drone usage to save lives. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry is headed to Ethiopia for the 50th anniversary summit of the African Union. From Afghanistan, two large explosions shaking a busy area in the center of Kabul on Friday, second major attack in the Afghan capital in a little over a week. And Russia says the Syrian government is agreeing in principle, to attend a proposed international peace conference on the country's future, something after 2 years or so of civil war. And from Reuters news agency, a man pretending to be the South Korean rapper Psy. See, how is it pronounced? Psy?
Psy,
exactly. He talked his way, apparently, into glitzy parties at the Cannes Film Festival, and he posed with fans until he was spotted drinking champagne by the manager of the real Psy.
So, I mean, Robert, this is bizarre because you don't know Kate Upton. Now you're not able to pronounce Psy. What's going on?
Yeah, but am I completely embarrassing the Voice of America? Nelson, you're a man of judgment. Am I embarrassing the Voice of America?
Nelson or Fabi, no.
No, no, okay.
He's being nice to you.
He'll give me a pass. Okay. Plus, I mean, we're videotaping the show, so I'm really going to make an effort to give it my best today. So, very interesting topic to begin the program. Earlier this month, I think it was even at the beginning of last week, Tacoma Park. You know Tacoma Park?
Yes.
It's a suburb here in Washington, D.C., just northwest of Washington. And the town council voted to allow people to vote in city elections from the age of 16 as opposed to 18. And from what I understand, Tacoma Park is actually the first city in the United States to take up such a measure. And the question, of course, is whether it's going to portend a trend in local elections. So we're going to talk right now to Lindsay Powers of the Gazette newspapers here in the Washington area. And she was on hand for the city council vote in Tacoma Park that took up the issue. Lindsay, it's good to have you on the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
So first of all, was it a surprise to people in Tacoma Park that the council took up this measure at all? I mean, what was the genesis of this decision?
Well, the genesis was the discussion was initially started by council member Tim Mayle and was picked up by other council members as well. I couldn't speak to whether it's necessarily a surprise, but it was definitely an issue that took up that a lot of residents spoke up about.
And from what I understand, and I read your report and a few others about this, it took some convincing. In other words, it sounds as though people on the town council, you know, we're not necessarily convinced it was a priority. It was, you know, it's the most important thing for the city to deal with. But they said, hey, you know, let's give it a pass and see how that's going to work.
Sure. There were a few council members that spoke out how they weren't sure it was maybe the best idea. But from what I, you know, after talking to them and from what I reported, they were kind of won over and convinced of the merits.
So what were some of the arguments that you heard in favor of, you know, the measure being adopted? Because, again, it sounds as though a lot of residents and obviously all the council members spoke on it.
Sure. So in a public hearing I attended in early April, some young residents came out and were talking about how they're learning about government in school, they're interested in political issues, and they really wanted to have a voice in the community. And they were also supported by peers outside the city, and of course some adults also testified in support of them.
Okay. And some of the arguments against, I suppose, were, you know, they don't necessarily have the maturity, they don't necessarily have the judgment to do anything like that. Where would you expect 16-year-olds to be able to vote?
Right. So I did hear that. And another argument that was made was that they might be too easily influenced by their parents at that age.
Now, you said in your report, and correct me if I misread, but that Tacoma Park may not be, it's the first city in the United States, it may not be the last to take up such a measure. Would you expand on that?
Sure. I can tell you, I spoke with someone at the organization Common Cause,
For our listeners who do not live in the United States, I'm sorry, Common Cause is...
Sure. As far as I can explain it, and I hope this is accurate, that it's an organization that really focuses on political issues, and they were not involved directly in this issue, but we're definitely keeping tabs on it. So I spoke with, I believe it was the director of the Maryland office, and she was saying just that she imagines that this won't be the first city, that now that Tacoma Park has taken this step, she thought that others would follow.
Said this, I mean, Tacoma Park stands out, you know, even in Maryland, which by American standards is progressive. And by that I mean, you know, Maryland is a state that has voted very strongly for Barack Obama in the last two elections. I think Democratic candidates have carried it, you know, by 20 or so percentage points the last five elections. But even by Maryland standards, you know, Tacoma Park is quite left. I mean, they had the only self-proclaimed Marxist mayor in the United States, Sammy Abbott, in the 80s.
Right.
And they actually proclaimed themselves a sanctuary for undocumented immigrants, didn't they?
I can speak to that. I can tell you that in fairly recent years that they allow non-citizens of the U.S. to vote in city elections.
Okay. And that's, you know, again, that's something to speak to the tradition of the city. Listen, Lindsay, thank you very much for going over this issue with us. And clearly we'll continue to follow and see whether it portends at all a trend in city elections here in the United States. Lindsay Powers of Gazette Newspapers, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So before we start the music, we have got to go to the news that I so distressed Roger Muntu. François Sou, who's our producer, is so well-liked that now her services have been taken up by second service, not just the French service, but also the Portuguese service of the Voice of America. It was so distressing to Roger that he showed up on time. It was so distressing to Rohit that he showed up late.
Well,
you know, so the roles...
I decided to play Roger's role.
So the roles are reversed. You know, I mean... You know, no. What will be left? Will Roger grow hair? Will Rohit shave his head?
No, I had a comment about you know, the Tacoma Park issue. Where
yes,
you know, my first reaction was how many people under 18 they have in the area. That's one thing. Mm. And second thing, everywhere we see that there is a serious problem of youth vote, whether it's at the state level, district level, or the national level, where you have to force youth to go out and vote. Will this thing make any difference, you know?
Well, that's one. In fact, that's one of the arguments that was advanced in favor of 16-year-old vote. And yeah, I know, that's perfect. In other words, the idea being that that if you give the right to vote to 16-year-olds, then yes, they will take the matter more seriously, they will feel more involved. I mean, of course, it remains to see whether the theory is right.
Yeah, I mean, Justin Bieber can become the next mayor, you know.
Well,
he's a Canadian, that's a problem. That's a Canadian citizen, that's a problem.
That won't work.
Although, he makes enough of his money here in the States now
that's
that true. I think he could get citizenship.
Definitely do that. I mean,
we get Maria, who's Roger Mooch, yeah. Would you vote for
Maria.
Justin Bieber as mayor of Tacoma Park? You don't live there, right?
No, I don't live in Maryland.
Okay. And it doesn't sound like you care too much either after hearing this discussion.
I don't think she likes Justin Bieber that much. She doesn't like Justin Bieber.
But he recently admitted he made mistakes, unlike many politicians.
Of course everybody.
Wasn't it at the, what is it called, at the Billboard Music Awards or something like that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
He got booed too.
I thought Roger really likes the idea of 16-year-olds voting, though.
Honestly, Reid, you're so right. I like that idea because guess what? I was looking on their Facebook this past weekend, and this is what happened on the chart. The chart actually demonstrates that the wide range of opinions on this subject. But on the Facebook, it's like, yes, most people say, well, it was almost like 740 people who said, well, no, we cannot, you know, have 16-year-old vote. But it's still significant that other people still believe that. Well, it's okay, though.
It's the beginning of a new trend.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah, I mean, probably. This is something definitely, and I have to applaud, you know, Robert for bringing this subject on the table, because it is definitely a serious issue if we start thinking that way. You see what I mean?
Okay, so François Sou, whom we can't hear still in the studio, has a question.
We can, yeah.
Okay, can we hear her?
Yeah,
Nelson, can we hear her in the studio? Yeah, she has to come in. Okay, so come into the studio and ask your question. Here we go.
All right, I wanted to ask, will they make the law as simple
so that the 16-year-olds can understand those laws before they vote?
I mean, it seems to me that as long, you know, there's not much to understand, really. I mean, as long as you're a resident, as long as you're documented as living, you know,
in the Tacoma city.
Then you have the right to vote in elections, you know, in the city election. I mean, that's really what it comes down to, I think, you know.
So. Interesting.
No, it's definitely an interesting issue. Okay, so we're going to wait until she goes back to the booth, and then time enough to ID myself in the show. You're listening to Independence West. I'm Robert D. Are never, ever, ever getting back together. No, we are never, ever, ever getting back together.
That's right.
You go talk to your friends, talk to my friends, talk to me.
Oh, my God.
But we are never, ever, ever
getting back together. Oh, my God. That's a long track of...
like, ever. Okay. Before we talk about the European Champions League final, a quick roundup of the European League, which just ended for the most part. So in France, Paris Saint-Germain. Beat Marseille and Lyon for the title. In England, of course, Manchester United. What's new? You know, Sir Alex may have retired, but hey, they win next year, and the year after that. Spain,
right.
Barcelona for a change. Portugal, Porto beat out Benfica for the title by 1 point. In Italy, I think it was Juventus for like the millionth time, something of that sort.
They always do.
And of course, Germany, Bayern Munich, what's new for, I think they've literally won the championship every other year in my lifetime.
Yeah.
And of course, we're going to turn to two German listeners. We are lucky enough to have on the air with us fans from each of those two teams.
Awesome.
In the Washington area, I'm first going to talk to Michael Hedge, who is the chairman of the D.C. area Bayern Munich Club. Michael, good to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
And Borussia Dortmund fan Elmar Zulk, who is a journalist living here in the United States, German journalist, but always a big fan of Borussia Dortmund. Elmar, pleasure to have you on the show. Elmar?
Yes.
Oh, good to talk to you.
Glad to be on your show.
Listen, for a second or so, I thought you were so shy and so frightened by Independence West. You know, you were afraid to speak out. But no, I know what to expect better from you. Listen, first of all, let me ask you first, Elmar. I mean, I think it's no secret that Bayern are going to be favorites going into this match. How do you see it?
Well, it's true. It's true. But first, let me emphasize, I grew up in Dortmund and go back as often as possible to visit games at Dortmund's home turf. So for them, it's really, really a big thing to be in the Champions League finals. And
for the first time since 97, when they actually won the whole thing. I remember watching that game.
Yes, true. That's the first time in 15 years to be on this level, international level in European soccer. And that's a great, great, great thing for Dortmund.
Listen, Michael, there is a sense, you know, with the Germans with whom I've spoken and with some others who follow German football, that if there is one team anywhere that can beat Bayern Munich these days, Dortmund is it. Do you agree?
I think if you look at the recent history of the matchup, Dortmund has been the dominant side in terms of what's taken place within the domestic league. And then looking back at the thrashing they gave us in the German Cup final, yes, I get that and I understand that. But I think that's already too far in the past. The pieces that were missing in terms of the development of the team, they're there now. And I think the one match, even though I believe Lewandowski was suspended for it in the German Cup quarterfinals this year, the one match that really counted for something this year was won by Bayern.
And yeah, that was in the league. That was in the league, right?
The two draws this year as being that significant. I had a way then, losing it all on my own. I had a heart then, but the queen has been overthrown. And I'm not sleeping now,
Michael, I want to continue with you. Dortmund is a team that likes fun attacking football. Could it be that Bayern Munich, with a superstar side, has finally figured them out this year?
I think so, and I think the reality is that the Götze loss, not having him in the final, is going to be massive, because what it does is it makes Royce much less effective. Royce is a much better player when Götze is on the pitch, and it brings Gundogan out of position. It makes him have to move forward. So I think that that fun, free-flowing Dortmund style that made them so good, not only has Bayern started to figure it out, but I don't think we're going to see it in the same capacity we have seen it when Götze is actually on the pitch.
Elmar, am I wrong to think that, in fact, not only has Munich figured out, you know, how to stop Dortmund's free-flowing attacking style, but their strength has always been counter-attacking football. You know, in other words, sit back and then let, you know, take advantage of when the opponent opens itself up too much.
That's their style, yes. That's the counter-pressure style, so they would like to win the game in the midfield, the ball in the midfield, and then they are pretty, pretty quick. And yes, Michael is totally right. We will miss Götze tomorrow due to his thigh injury, and that might be a great disadvantage for Germany, for Dortmund. But on the other hand, we still have Reus, we have Lewandowski, we have Gundogan, we have Nuri Sahin, who might be on the pitch tomorrow. So there are players that know how to play quickly to the offensive, and that might be an advantage, but let's see.
You know, there are things that strike me about Borussia Dortmund, and I want to begin with you, Elmar. But it seems to me that it's a very intelligently run club, because, you know, they've won the league a couple of years, and now they're in the Champions League final, just as in the 1990s. And it seems to me that they're the one team, they probably don't have pockets as deep as Bayern, but they're the one team in the German league that can in any way compete, you know, with Bayern Munich, not just on the field, but in terms of long-term development, you know, strategy, you know, money, that sort of things. How do you see it?
I think Dortmund learned their lesson in the late 90s, early 2000s, when they were almost bankrupt, that they cannot go the path that Bayern did, that Munich did. So take a lot of money in your hands, buy all the most expensive and best players in the world, and then let's play. That's not the Dortmund style. What they learned is we have to invest into our own future and have to give youngsters an opportunity to play. So Götze is 20 years old. Royce is 24. They have played now for a couple of years together, and they are very young. And they came to Dortmund when they were maybe 14, 15, 16 years old. So that's the Dortmund strategy. And I think they have learned their lesson. They cannot go the Bayern Munich way. You and I go hard at each other like we're going to war. You and I go rough. We keep throwing things and slamming the doors. You and I get so damn dysfunctional. We start keeping score. You and I get sick. Yeah, I know that we can't do this no more. Yeah. But baby, there you go again, making me love you. Yeah, I stop using my head, let it all go. Got you stuck on my body like a tattoo. Now, Michael, I want to continue with you. Do you expect that in the coming years you're going to be seeing, you know, Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund fight for the title? I mean, it's very interesting what Elmar just said, because it sounds as though it's, you know, it's the one team that is thinking in long-term future, you know, nearly as intelligently as Bayern Munich is.
Yeah, I think Dortmund will definitely be one of the main sides to challenge Bayern over the next coming years. I mean, if you look at the financial health of the Bundesliga, I think it's really starting to pay off. And although Schalke didn't have the best season, you know, they finished fourth, so at least they got the Champions League qualifying spot. But I think a team like that that has a lot of money and makes a lot of money can also, further development, you see players like Julian Draxler, who's come up through Schalke, and I think they have the potential to challenge, and you know, maybe a Leverkusen, something like that. But I think by far, at least at this point, Dortmund has set itself up to be the most successful challenger to Bayern Munich's dominance in Germany.
One final question to the both of you, and I'll begin with you, Michael. Where will you be watching tomorrow's match?
I will be, there's a little, for the D.C. area, there's a little bar called Summer's.
Oh, that's the best one. Yeah.
And yeah. Our fan club has been meeting there for a number of years. I've been watching Germany play in the World Cup and Bayern and all their international competitions since probably 2002 World Cup. So that's definitely where I'll be to watch the final again.
How about you, Enmar?
Well, I will watch it with friends in a Bethesda pub. It's called Harps and Fiddle.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And also together with my 10-year-old son, who happens to be a strong Bayern Munich supporter. One of us has to comfort the other after the game.
Smart choice.
It's going to be a very interesting dinner time, I'm telling you. Okay, so I'm sorry. Now, one very, very last question. Let me begin with you, Elmar. What's your tip, as they say in German? How do you see the score tomorrow?
Well, the first team who scores will win, and I think it will be Bayern Munich, unfortunately, 2-0.
Okay.
Oh, man, come on.
Okay, Michael?
I think everything, if I'm looking at everything honestly, I expect a few goals. I have to say 3-1 for Bayern, but I'm definitely not counting out Dortmund. Nice. I think they have a fantastic squad, and Bayern's really not going to have to. It really can't stop playing if they want to win the match tomorrow.
Okay, so let's go around. Let's begin with Rohit. How do you see it?
I'm going for the underdog. I think it's going to be 2-1 in favor of Borussia.
Okay, all right. Roger?
Those guys have way more experience. Bayern, still, man. I'm just...
Bayern.
Yes.
Okay, score?
Score. I have to go with 2-0.
Okay, Maria, how do you see it? Okay, you couldn't care less. Fair enough. Okay, all right, let's see it. Okay, Nelson, how do you call it
Nelson,
for tomorrow?
How do you call for tomorrow, Nelson? What do you think?
Okay, it's all right. Tell France. She'll tell us.
What?
Okay, France.
What did Nelson say?
2-1 for who?
Okay. Bayern.
2-1 for Bayern.
Yes.
Okay, all right, France. And how does France see it tomorrow?
I don't
she says she only cares sweating about all the guys sweating in front of the ball. Yeah,
that means 0-0.
Oh yeah, and all their manly legs and all that running around the pitch. That sort of thing. Yeah, of course.
I think I'm the only underdog here. So
you have to understand the priorities of the viewer. I hate making predictions anyway. So there we go. So I'll leave it at that. So anyway, thank you very much, Michael Hedge, president of the DC area Bayern Munich fan club, and Elmar Zulk, journalist, German journalist here in Washington and supporter of Borussia Dortmund. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and we'll all be watching the game, you know, at different places tomorrow. Thanks again. Let's do it again before too long, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks
all
for
right.
having me.
Pleasure. Thank you. So,
I mean, this is huge, Robert, because, you know, it's like, how many times have finals be played between, like, the teams from the same countries? We don't see that a lot. Yeah. You know, right?
I mean especially in the last few years, if you look at it, I mean, not having any English side or an Italian side or a Spanish side, that's phenomenal.
Absolutely.
And secondly, this time they're playing in England. It's unfortunate that there is no English side, but it's a great opportunity for, you know, and as I said, I read it, 60,000 fans, German fans in Wembley. That's going to be amazing, you know.
You know, I agree with you, but as an Ajax Amsterdam fan, you know, and by the way, let's add to the roundup that Ajax won the league for the 32nd time this year. So Ajax champions again, the way it should be. But, you know, I miss the time when a side from a smaller country, truly smaller league, could make it. And then there's the weird situation of, you know, of French football. I mean, they know how to produce good players, but their sides never, ever make it, you know, to the European Cup finals just because they don't have the money.
Right.
It will be interesting to see, by the way, whether Qatari money in Paris Saint-Germain changes any
That'll
of that
awesome.
For what it's worth.
But see, whether this changes anything in Europe in terms of football and, you know, teams from Germany start dominating or, you know, I don't see a big change. You know, next year we'll be back to square one, whether it will be either Madrid, Barcelona, Chelsea, or Manchester.
Yeah, it's a one-year off sort of thing. Yeah, absolutely right. Well, on this cheerful note, you're listening to Independence West. I'm Robert D. Uh-oh, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling 22. Everything will be all right if you keep me next to you. You're listening to Independence West on the Voice of America, your Taylor Swift station. So, a little bit earlier, Françoise Sou conducted her first Independence West interview. She joined me in the studio to talk about telenovelas with an executive from Telemundo, which is one of the big Spanish language TV networks here in the United States. Now, telenovelas are this, Spanish language form of soap opera, you know, popular entertainment. And what's interesting about them is that apparently the whole thing runs for a limited time. You know, 120 episodes at 30 minutes. They only runs for something like 4 to 6 months of something of that sort. And it's an immensely popular form of entertainment that originally comes from Latin America that has now spread here to the United States, where networks like Telemundo produce them, and they're now being marketed to all different regions of the world. Interesting to note, by the way, you know, my friends who know telenovela insist it's not the same as a soap opera at all. But that kind of entertainment, if you roughly want to lump them together, daily television, popular entertainment, that sort of thing, you know.
So if it's not a soap opera, what kind of...
Well, the difference they make is that a U.S.-style soap opera runs for something like 30, 40, 50 years, right? seriously, but for an unlimited amount of time. Here, you have a single story that closes out after 6 months.
Well, I mean, same, yeah, it's the same thing. I think even Santa Barbara is a single story which, doesn't stop. It just continues for, I don't know, as long as I remember. So,
but you see, the interesting thing about this is you have this form of entertainment here in the United States. You know, the popularity is declining.
Right.
You know, it used to be that the entire afternoon was taken out by shows of the sort, and now you're having these shows replaced by shows like, Ellen DeGeneres or, the doctors, things of that sort.
Right.
And in Latin America, it's and in Spanish language TV in the United States, those shows are as strong as ever. So earlier, France and I spoke to Karen Barhueta, who is a senior vice president and general manager of Telemundo Internacional, which is the network's Latin American arm. And she spoke to us about the whole phenomenon of telenovelas. Let's listen to her. A telenovela is not the same as an American-style soap opera, is it?
That's right. It's actually a show that has a beginning and an end, usually around 100, 120 episodes. So we have stories that are different every time, and they have, like I said, an amount of episodes. It's not like the American soap opera that has been running for 20, 30 years.
There was a time I used to look into my father's eyes.
But is it, there's something really particular about Latino-style telenovelas in particular, because the fact is everyone produces, you know, this sort of popular entertainment. And when I say everyone, you can find it in pretty much every country. And my impression is that in most countries, you would find a series that has a beginning and an end, like the Latin American telenovela. What is it that makes the American telenovela stand out?
You mean the American telenovela? When you say the
Spanish language telenovela. What is it that makes it stand out as opposed to what you could find out not just in the United States, you know, and we've established it's not a soap opera, but also in any other part of the world? There's something quite special. I mean, Latin American telenovelas are popular even in countries like Israel or Lebanon or other parts
Definitely.
Of the world completely.
Definitely. Actually, we distribute telenovelas in over 100 countries worldwide, including Africa, Asia, Eastern Europe, and Latin America itself, like you mentioned. And I think what's special about them is exactly that they're not just prolonging the story, you know, for years and years. What happens is we create, you know, a very different story every time, and they go from romantic story to suspense to based on real life to action telenovelas. So the Latin American viewer is used to going home, sitting in the couch, and just watching this novela that usually is very aspirational, and dream with the actors and the stories, and you know, enjoy the locations, and they can even rest from one novela to the next, in the sense that they can watch a novela 8, and when it finishes, they decide not to watch for a while, and then they start watching the following one 6 months later. What I'm trying to say is that they don't have to be attached to this show forever. Because when you start watching a story, it's like when you start reading a book. You want to finish the book, even if it's not so good. Mm. So somehow I think it's the variety in the stories and how the Latin American production companies have decided to really invest in the production quality and also bring a variety of stories and innovate and actually surprise viewers with the novelas. And so they don't necessarily know how they're going to develop or how the end is going to come up, you know.
A question, talking about dreams, like how most watchers actually get attached to the actors, I have always wondered, like, do telenovelas actually portray like the real world that people live in, like Hispanic countries or even Brazil or either countries like that?
Oh yeah, definitely, of course. I mean, in Brazil they make novelas that are attractive to Brazilian audiences, and they show how they live in the favelas and also, you know, the people that have money, the millionaires, and that happens so in the production in the countries that they produce novelas, like Mexico, Venezuela, Colombia, and here in the United States, what we try to portray what happens all along Latin America, with an emphasis in Mexico since our audience is 70% Mexican.
Now there are some telenovelas that are being produced here in the United States. I mean, you work at Telemundo, you know, which is a big U.S.-based Spanish-language network, but my sense is that a lot more telenovelas are now being produced here in the United States simply because the Spanish-speaking market, the audience, is so large here in the United States, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct. Actually, I say 15 years ago, there were no novelas being produced in the United States just because Univision buys all their telenovelas from Televisa, and Telemundo used to also...
I'm sorry, for our audience outside of the Western Hemisphere, Televisa is a major Mexican network, TV network.
Exactly, so they have that catalog for themselves to program their grid. What happened with Telemundo is that we used to buy novelas from all Latin American producers. However, 10 years ago or so, we decided to start producing our own novelas. So right now, as we're talking, there are 3 novelas being produced in the United States. And we also have a production line in Mexico. And so, yes, we're producing for this market, and it's been working really well for us.
Okay, I have another question just to know, like, when it comes to the actors, when you hire them, do they actually reflect the actual population, or do you have more specific type of actors that you want? Like in here in the US, they actually tend to hire like white females, you know, white men to be the main actors in the movies. Do you also have this kind of issue where you don't hire people who are actually the minorities?
No, we have a variety of actors. We have all colors, all sizes. We actually have actors from Mexico, from Argentina, from Colombia, from Peru, from Ecuador, from Dominican Republic, from any country you can think of in Latin America. And we actually need all different kinds of people, because novelas, like you were saying, reflect real life in a way. Even though sometimes they're very aspirational, there are other cases that they're based on real life events. So they need to look very real. And we don't have a certain look that we're looking for.
I say y'all having a good time out there.
They can't, they won't, they never will. Are there markets, are there new markets where, you know, Telemundo or Univision are looking to expand with the telenovelas they're producing? Because we're talking about, you know, the popularity of, you know, telenovelas in parts of Africa or in Israel, for example. With the new emerging markets, are there parts of the world where you're looking to expand, you know, to sell those products more and more?
Yes, definitely. Actually, Africa is it's a market that has been developing for the last 5 years, and that's a market where we every year we dub novelas to English and we sell to South Africa and many other countries in Africa to show these stories. And also countries in Eastern Europe have been, you know, expanding and always consuming the genre. Europe, the other side of Europe, it's not so, you know, I don't have the word to say that. They don't consume novelas as the rest of the world, but definitely Asia as well. They've been consuming novelas for the past 20 years. But you could say that Africa has been the latest one to get in the train.
But do you expect you at some point that you would be able to expand also into countries like India or China? You know, those are the two big emerging economies.
We have had shows, novelas running in China. They just prefer shorter versions, so we've edited some of our shows to fit, you know, their needs. And we've had novelas in countries like Japan, China, Philippines, Indonesia. And you also mentioned
India.
India. In India, we've also sold them formats like the novela, the scripts for them to actually create their own. But we had a very successful story called El Cuerpo del Deseo that ran in India and was a huge success.
And that means the body of desire. I'm translating literally from
exactly.
The Spanish.
Yeah, body of desire.
Okay. One thing, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Karen, but I think at the moment there is or there may be a series based on the life of Pablo Escobar that's running, and I think it's running on Mundo Fox. And I, you know, I caught maybe 20 minutes of it. I'm not a big connoisseur of telenovelas by any means, but I think there's a series, again, on Pablo Escobar, the late drug kingpin that's running right now. I mean, I would think that would be a blockbuster, wouldn't it?
Yes, and it was, actually. And we did program that show in our channel here in the States. It was produced by Caracol in Colombia, and it's been doing really well in many countries in Latin America because it's like a, you know, a piece of story, of history, of what happened in that country 10, 15 years ago. And it's very well produced, and audiences in many countries have been crazy about it.
From hanging on too tight, clenched jaw. I've got another headache again tonight. Eyes on fire, eyes on fire, and they burn from all the tears I've been crying. I've been crying, I've been dying over you. Tie a knot in the rope, trying to hold, but there's nothing to grasp, so I let go.
Well, there you go.
You can also watch with closed caption in English.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
There you go. But, you know, one last question. And by the way, a colleague of mine here at VOA who is, you know, Hispanic told me that in some cities, in some U.S. markets, Spanish language telenovelas are actually the strongest rating programs in any language, you know, English or Spanish. They beat out any other program at certain times of the day, which really shows their reach even here in the United States. That's pretty incredible.
That's definitely happened. I mean, I work for the international side of the company, but you can read every day in the trade news how El Señor de los Cielos, which is a novela, that we are airing at 10 p.m. It's, you know, leading in many different demographics, no matter of the language, okay. Like you said.
Okay. And finally, you know what? I forgot what I was going to... What I was going to ask is the following. One last question. Could you leave us with a few tips as to maybe the two or three next big telenovelas that are going to be coming out in the next few months? I mean, obviously, this is a big growing market. You know, there must be some really ambitious projects that must be coming out of Telemundo, no?
Actually, we just had our upfront and we showed a few stories that we're going to be producing. I don't have the names in English handy, but one is called Dama y Obrero.
Okay, so lady and worker, okay.
Exactly, and it's a story about, you know, an engineer that falls in love with a worker, not knowing that he's going to be one of the workers in her next engineering project. And we're also going to launch Marido en Alquiler, which is like a husband for rent or something like that.
Okay, okay.
She's a handyman and she's going to hit the lotto and become a millionaire and fall in love with a guy that it's not single, but who has a terrible marriage. So there is another story. Well, novelas have many different stories within the story. So those are just, you know, the main plot. And we're going to also, we have other ones coming up, but I don't have the names handy.
Okay.
But, I mean, we produce 8 to 10 novelas a year, every year. So that's, you know, a big, our prime time is made on novelas, so it's very important for our company.
Listen, one very last question, because that prompted a question for me now. What roughly speaking, is the budget for a telenovela?
Oh, I'm not to say.
Okay.
I'd rather not talk about it, because it's not...
Fair enough.
Okay, so that was Karen Berrueta, who is General Manager and Vice President of Telemundo Internacional, based in Miami. That interview gave me a great idea for a telenovela. I'm going to leave VOA. I'm going to start writing telenovelas. It's going to be about a Congolese broadcaster who resorts to extreme measures when his producer leaves to go to another service. And the Congolese broadcaster is going to be working at an unnamed broadcast organization in an unnamed country that broadcasts to an unnamed number of countries.
And he must have a best friend from India.
Ah, I love that. He must have a best friend from India, of course. Yeah, and of course, the people in the production booth are wondering what they're doing working with such nutcases.
And he has to work with an engineer from Cabo Verde. That's all I'm asking.
You know, I think there will never have been anything like that.
Okay,
in the history of mankind.
We're going to sell out, you know, our product to China, you know, Chinese market. Hey.
Are you kidding? We're going to be invited to
that's
live
right.
in China.
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Exactly. You know,
okay.
I mean...
Yeah, apparently, so our engineer, Nelson Herbert, who happens to be from Cabo Verde, says mm-hmm. we should listen to a like, Nigerian telenovela, or maybe it could become a Nigerian telenovela, something like that. That would be another excellent topic for a future show, by the way, because they're big over there.
It will be. But Robert, first of all, let me commend you for that interview you had with the lady. But the only word I really have to say, it's drama. And I think Roit, you'll agree with me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's all about drama, man.
Yep.
It's
yep.
all about drama. I mean,
yep.
Roit was just telling us in India,
yep.
everybody, you know, stays, you know, glued to the screen to yep. watch any...
400 million people watch.
400 you know? Million people. I mean, Nelson, we have money to make here, man. 400 million people doing nothing...
Okay, François Sou has a comment to make. François Sou is about to speak.
Uh-oh.
This is
We're
big.
We're in trouble now.
This is big, yo. This is big.
We're in trouble now.
Oh, yes, absolutely. What have I done now? What have we done now?
I've done nothing. Just to say, just a little anecdote
from
Ivory Coast. You know, I'm Ivorian. And we have telenovelas, which is broadcast every day from Monday to Friday, 7:30 p.m. Mm. to 8 p.m.
Gossip.
That's the time you should not, you know, say hi to a girl, because you don't even want to do anything to anybody, because wow. those 30 minutes nobody's in the streets.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you invite a girl for a date and something, it has to be
after
before 7:30 or after 8 period. Yeah. Otherwise you ain't gonna have a date.
Wow.
Yo, that sound all right though. Yo, me and Cool V, this is gonna be our new single. And when you hear the story, you say it's alright though. Yo, Cool V, why'd you give me a cue? One more cue and then I'm ready to go in.
Don't you like when the winter's gone and all of a sudden it start getting warm? The trees and the grass start looking fresh and the sun in the sky be looking at best. Birds be singing.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what you get. Independence West, 1 hour of talk about telenovelas, 1 hour of talk about football, of talk about voting age, 16 in American towns. Oriane Issi is the latest broadcaster at the Voice of America Central Africa Service, who is in this production studio observing all that. Welcome to the VOA, and this is what the career you have to look forward to. Anyway, this has been Independence West. We had Rohit Kulkarni, we had Roger Muntu, yep. We had Roger Muntu's intern Maria. I forget your last name, unfortunately. Nunez Oliver. And we had Nelson Herbert in the engineering booth. We had, of course, François Sue, the only one, the irreplaceable in the production booth, and as observer, Oyan Itangeshaka. Here we go. This has been ID West. I'm Robert D.
Now, girls, have you ever broke up with your boyfriend and you thought that the world was coming to an end? Sitting around the house pouting for no reason, just because you thought your man was skeezing for a couple of days. Looked gloomy and gray, thinking about the old happy days. All of a sudden, the telephone rang. He begged for your forgiveness, and you know what that brings. Joy and happiness into your life before you felt like your heart was stabbed by a knife. I'm telling you, girls, keep the man that you got, because if you cheat, you might need a VD shot. You know two wrongs don't make a right, and if he did something wrong, don't do the same, it's not polite. Please don't make this breaking up a trend, because
it's spring again. Oh, everybody knows it's spring again. Tell the girls and boys and people above, this is the time to fall in love.
Now, fellas, have you ever met a girl that tried to...
You've been listening to Independence West on VOA.
See my homeboys frying and fret.